This is the news on CNBC.
He'll receive another dose of remdesivir here today, and then we plan to get him home.
President Trump's health.
So you're actively not telling us what those lung scans showed.
Tonight, what we know and what we don't know, and what's next for both campaigns. Scorched earth, hundreds of homes destroyed, dozens of lives lost. California hits a record milestone this year, 4 million acres burned.
We have been told since early March, beware the fall.
COVID cases climbing, hospitalization numbers growing nationwide. As cold weather approaches, how the country's largest city is dealing with coronavirus hotspots.
I promise you, I will not let you down.
And new tonight, CNBC takes the pulse of voters in key swing states. Will COVID in the White House impact the election? And good evening. We begin with the breaking news you've been watching here on CNBC. The president is back at the White House. He is going to come off the helicopter, Marine One, in just a moment. And we have live pictures. These are the pictures of him arriving. We saw the president walk out of Walter Reed and board Marine One without assistance and walk up the staircase at the White House. Or he will, at least. The president's doctors say he may not be entirely out of the woods yet, but his condition has continued to improve, they say, since yesterday. And they insist the president is healthy enough to leave Walter Reed, as he just did. The president's medical team today refused to disclose some crucial details. Doctors did scans of the president's lungs, but they would not say what those scans showed, citing patient privacy laws. In other words, whatever they did show, the president didn't want us to know, or we would. The last lung issue with a sitting president was when Reagan got shot. The White House released information about President Reagan's chest x-rays just 3 days after the shooting. In fact, they put the chest x-rays on TV. The president's doctors also refused to disclose exactly when the president first tested positive or when he last tested negative.
On testing, can you tell us when he had his last negative test? Was it Thursday? Was it Wednesday? When do you remember when he had his last negative test?
I don't want to go backwards.
Meantime, the COVID outbreak at the White House keeps growing. Today, we learned Kayleigh McEnany and two of her aides are now COVID positive. Just yesterday, the press secretary was still working. She was around reporters and others without a mask. McEnany is one of several people who were at a White House Rose Garden ceremony last weekend and have now tested positive. Here's a snapshot of where everybody was sitting that day. Earlier today, when he announced he would be leaving the hospital, the president tweeted, "Do not be afraid of COVID and don't let COVID, quote, dominate your life." That virus has now killed more than 210,000 Americans and is still killing somewhere around 700 people every day across our nation. And right now we're seeing hospitalizations surge in nearly two dozen states. We've just gotten the White House pool tape. This wasn't live. It was video that they sent out afterwards of the president walking in. And here's that video. Sometimes they allow live cameras out there to record these sorts of things. Today, they only allowed the pool cameras to shoot it and then turn the videotape around so that we could show it to you. And here that is. The chopper is taking off. The president is back in the residence. And we believe we're going to see him again. We're not certain, but we believe we're going to. We have every reason to believe we're going to see him again. And should we, we'll take you back there for that. A pretty incredible scene of events, turn of events here in the last 30 minutes. We had been told that he would leave the hospital at 6:30 Eastern time, and shortly thereafter he did. And here he is on the balcony. It's a long way away, this camera, but you can see the president waving there. And we're expecting to see him again soon, I've just been told. At any rate, Eamon Javers is watching over all of this. We'll keep watching the pictures and talk to Eamon, who's outside Bethesda's the hospital in Bethesda. Eamon?
Yeah, Shep, that's right. You know, what they're saying here, the medical team is saying, is that they felt confident to let the president leave here at Walter Reed Medical Center here in Bethesda because they didn't need all of the elaborate medical equipment and procedures that are available here. They felt that the president could go back to the White House. He could have that final dose of remdesivir at the White House, supervised by the White House medical unit, and that facility, which is world-class inside the White House, would be enough to handle what they think they're going to see over the coming days. But Sean Connolly, the president's doctor, said today that the president is not out of the woods yet. He laid out sort of what to expect medically over the next coming days. Here's what he said.
We're in a bit of uncharted territory when it comes to a patient that received the therapies he has so early in the course. So we're looking to this weekend. If we can get through to Monday with him remaining the same or improving, better yet, then we will all take that final deep sigh of relief.
But, Shep, as you point out, there are a couple of things that the White House would not disclose today, including what was on his lung scans, Connolly citing HIPAA regulations. But, again, as you point out, the president could simply waive those and order those documents to be released if he so chose. The president clearly does not want that information out. And also,
excuse
we don't have any information
Amen. I know
now.
You can't see it, but this is the White House pool tape of the president. Let's play it Nat's full and listen here. Not a lot to hear. He got some questions, but we really didn't think we would hear much from him, and sure enough, we didn't. So he's going to go inside, and we have reason to believe we may see him again, and if that happens, we'll go back. I wanted you to finish up, if you could, Eamon, with Kayleigh McEnany.
Yeah, I mean, the White House press secretary announcing today that she has tested positive for this terrible disease. A number of other people inside the press office have now tested positive as well, so this is a debilitated White House that the president is returning to. The virus is running rampant throughout the president's staff. It is running rampant throughout the residents at the White House, including the president and the first lady, who are now infected with it. This is going to be a very tricky couple of days here as the president tries to grapple with running the country, running an election campaign, and trying to get his arms around the scale of the virus problem inside his own home and inside his own professional staff.
Yeah, no
All
doubt.
Of that very daunting, even for somebody who is fully healthy, Shep.
Let's see if we hear anything here. This is all stagecraft. Now that it's happened, I can tell you that we were given advance notice that the president would walk up the stairs, and then they had crafted it such that he would stand there for this moment, of this standing moment, where he removed his mask. There's no one around him, obviously. I'm not judging him. I'm telling you what he did. He removed his mask. Now he's saluting, obviously. And Eamon, can you see this?
I don't have those pictures, Shep.
Well, it's quite something. He clearly wanted a moment, and maybe he's saluting the doctors and nurses who helped cared for him, or maybe the Secret Service agents who were just with him and in his 6-foot range on board Marine One, or maybe the staffers who were inside the White House to protect and serve him when he returns inside infected with COVID-19. Maybe he was saluting the
nation.
We
know that the president...
I don't know, but I know, you know, Eamon, he's still standing there, and for a photo opportunity, the last time I remember just a sort of stop and stand, that was outside the church after they had removed the demonstrators from in front of the White House and he held the Bible up. I don't remember. And there you go. He just finished his standing. Amen.
You know, look, it's visceral, Shep. I mean, what the president wants to demonstrate here is just physical strength. Look, I'm standing on my own 2 feet.
Yeah.
I'm walking. I'm ambulatory. I'm okay. This president does not like any sign of weakness at all, physical or otherwise. What we're told is that he really did not like the coverage over the weekend, which presented him as something of an invalid with oxygen emergencies and the like. He was raring to go to get out of Walter Reed. He wanted to demonstrate this, and he wanted to have that moment, both coming out of the golden doors here at Walter Reed and then walking into the White House and that standing picture that you're describing, Shep. I mean, it's all of a piece to show that this president is fine, or at least is going to be fine.
We all hope so. Thanks very much, Eamon Javers. He mentioned Kayleigh McEnany. She's not the only person in the president's inner circle to catch COVID-19. The former New Jersey governor, Chris Christie, tested positive over the weekend. He was in on the president's preparation team for last week's debate. The former White House aide, Kellyanne Conway, she confirmed on Twitter that she, too, tested positive. That was Friday night. And the president's campaign manager, Bill Stepien, he tested positive after traveling with Hope Hicks. And there are concerns that more will test positive in the hours or days ahead. CNBC's Kayla Tauchi tracking the spread of the virus from the White House. Kayla?
Shep, you have a host of high-ranking Republican officials who have come down with the coronavirus, who are at a variety of White House and RNC events in the last week. But then you also have the coronavirus spreading at every single rung of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, especially for the rank and file, the housekeeping staff working in the residence. Two of those members have tested positive. Three journalists who have been working at White House pool events over the last week have also tested positive. We're awaiting word from the White House Correspondents Association on whether there is more. You also have two lower level aides who are working in the press office who report to Kayleigh McEnany. And then you have the president's body man, Nick Luna, the plainclothes guard who accompanies the president at all times. He is married to an aide to Jared Kushner. So there's a lot of concern there. We reached out to Kushner's office. We did not get a response on whether Kushner continues to test negative. His wife, the advisor Ivanka Trump, has said that she tested negative today, but is working from home out of an abundance of caution. There are others who have had COVID exposure as well, like the Attorney General William Barr, who said he tested negative, but is now in isolation because of that exposure that he has had. There are many officials who are in this boat. One of them is not the Vice President, Mike Pence, who is currently on his way to Utah for a vice presidential debate that will happen later this week. But Shep, earlier today, I had the opportunity to speak with Joe Grogan, who until May was the head of the president's domestic policy council and was a member of the White House coronavirus task force. He said based on the way the White House is set up and its flawed protocols, an outbreak of this scale was inevitable.
I think the fact that they didn't get hit sooner probably did lead to a sense of fatalism and overconfidence over time, just humans behaving this way. And here we've got people back in school, people going back to work, and the kinetics of human interactions are increasing more. So you will see some more infection.
There are questions about the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue as well, with an outbreak growing at the Capitol. Two, three Republican senators testing positive and quarantining. And of course, the Republican-led Senate is operating virtually for 2 weeks. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi acknowledged that there is no formal testing program, but said one would be hard to operate because there are 20,000 people who report to work at the Capitol on any given day. And when Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was asked a similar question about when there would be a robust testing program put in place, he declined to answer the question.
Kayla Tauchi live tonight. Thank you. Attention tonight on the president's health. Dr. Naheed Bedalia is from Boston University School of Medicine and the Boston Medical Center, director of the special pathogens unit there, and NBC News medical contributor. Dr. Bedalia, there's still a lot that we don't know about the president's health. What does today's discharge suggest to you?
Good evening, Shep. I think you've heard over the weekend that for a majority of us who've been taking care of COVID patients, the initiation of steroids generally implies that someone is at least moderately to severely ill with COVID-19. And so the way that I'm envisioning this is a person who is a patient who's elderly, who has a couple of medical comorbidities, or at least, you know, the being overweight, and has received experimental drugs along with steroids that imply that he's sick enough. And maybe we don't understand. Of course, none of us know what the inside of his care looks like. But today, this transfer to me, as Dr. Conley said, is not a patient being discharged from the hospital. He's getting discharged to go to another medical supervisory unit. He's going to the White House, exactly, where there is that support. And the kind of things that they will be doing for the rest of his week, there are a few things that they're looking at, right? One is the fact that he'll need to continue to have blood work because he's getting these experimental. He got the experimental therapy Regeneron last Friday. He's continuing to get remdesivir. They will continue to watch him clinically. And if they should need so, they have imaging there. The other is CDC says, you know, and what we know from studies is that a person who's infected is generally infectious or contagious to others within the first 10 days of their illness. after they've stopped having their fever, you know, 24 hours after they've stopped having their fever, but at least 10 days from the onset of symptoms, which means the president is currently contagious. And what I would see is that the White House is probably preparing to create that infection control protocols to ensure that he can continue his work or be in his residence without potentially infecting others around him.
It really was a relief to hear the doctors say that he's improved. And I tell you, you watched him walk up those stairs there. You know, he's not a brand new guy. And that appeared almost, you know, that appeared fairly effortlessly. But we've all sort of studied this enough now to where we all understand when you're older, it's harder. And when you have comorbidities, which he does, that makes it more complicated. And we also know that 6, 8, 10 days in, some patients, not all, but some patients get a lot worse and it can happen really fast. Are you concerned there?
Yeah, and I would say the fact that they started him on steroids, so what's driving that second kick of this disease is that this virus, you know, does the damage that it does, and then it elicits your immune system to have this response that's overactive, which then damages your system itself. And that span of the immune inflammatory response can continue for a while. So I would say the start of the steroids implies that they were already worried about that, and so they're watching him closely for that. And that's one of the things that they'll be watching on his blood. It is heartening to see him walk, you know, to be able to do this. I hope it means that he has received the care, the best care possible in the world, I would imagine. And he is feeling better. You know, the part that I want to ensure, because I think his tweet sort of is harmful in the way that by putting on what potentially looks like this orchestrated move from one hospital to another medical unit, it makes people feel like this is not such a serious disease. And as someone who's taken care of patients with COVID, I could tell you this is anything from the truth. There are people who, when they get hospitalized, have pretty severe courses.
Doctor, can't thank you enough. Speak to you again soon. I mentioned that the coronavirus is spreading across the nation again now, and there are particular areas of concern, including New York City, where there are surges in particular neighborhoods. Officials targeting 9 zip codes in the boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens. It's where new infections are spiking. Statewide, the number of positive tests is at 1%, which is really fantastic. But these zip codes are seeing rates well over 3%. You can see some of them are much higher than that. We mentioned schools in these areas are shutting down starting tomorrow, but for now, non-essential businesses will stay open. The New York governor, Mario Cuomo, says that the new clusters are like hot embers in a field of dry grass. The entire city is under threat. CNBC's Contessa Brewer is in one of those Brooklyn hotspots. Contessa, how are they dealing with this, tackling these new clusters?
Well, look, Shep, you mentioned it there. One thing, no school starting tomorrow in 9 communities. And just as we're facing this renewed outbreak in New York City, Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio appear to be engaging in a kind of power battle.
The only action we're taking today on this data, we are using the zip codes to close those schools tomorrow.
That falls short of Mayor Bill de Blasio's plan, which calls for closing non-essential businesses in 9 zip codes where infections are surging. Today, de Blasio pushed back, saying the closures are happening.
The governor's team are considering if they have alterations they want to make to that geography or to the approach. But until we hear otherwise, our plan is to move ahead Wednesday morning with enforcement in those 9 zip codes of all non-essential businesses.
The governor and mayor were also at odds during the first wave, with the governor often trumping plans announced by City Hall. The bickering not sitting well with local business owners.
You wish that they could get on a call and, you know, have a conversation and make a great plan together. It doesn't always feel like the most efficient government.
The latest virus outbreak comes just 6 days after New York City restaurants reopened for indoor dining. Business owners are trying to salvage whatever they can from a terrible year.
As a city, we all have to do our best to keep each other safe. So that's what we're doing at Pies and Thighs. Our hope is that that's what restaurants are doing across the city.
Well, here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, you can imagine these business owners are just crushed at the prospect of things shutting down once again. After all, New Yorkers are tough. I mean, facing daunting odds, Shep, in the spring, and now asking themselves, come on, if we can't make it here, can we make it anywhere?
Oh, there you go, Contessa. contestant, thanks so much. I'm the idiot who called him Mario Cuomo instead of Andrew. Sorry, Mr. Governor. The doctors say we can likely see our future here in America over in Europe. COVID cases flaring across France tonight, forcing Paris into a maximum COVID alert, as they put it. Starting tomorrow, bars in the French capital will shutter. Restaurants still open, but under strict regulations. France seeing numbers surge. Last week, the country had more than 77,000 new cases. That's from Johns Hopkins. NBC's Matt Bradley live for us this early morning in Paris. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Shep. You know, the situation here, I'm not sure if it would actually be anything remarkable to you if you looked at it. The fact is that they are putting in these new confinement measures, but you wouldn't necessarily recognize them. You know, it was only a couple of months ago when President Emmanuel Macron said that France is at war with the virus. And only a couple of weeks ago, he said, we have to live with the virus. And Shep, I got to tell you, they are living. This city is still going strong. And even though the government has just said that they're going to impose these new measures, it's because of this will to keep going that this new reconfinement is really only a reconfinement in name. And that's why these new measures, it's really unclear whether, first of all, they're actually going to mean anything for diners and revelers who are out at night, or whether they're actually going to mean anything for the people who own businesses. It seems to me like a lot of people here are not going to be abiding by the rules. They haven't really been abiding, if by the spirit of the law, not by the actual law itself. I spoke with a bartender, a waiter here earlier this evening, and he said that this is going to be a massive economic blow. He said he was confused by the new measures that were announced today because, again, they look a lot like the old measures. And he also lamented a certain loss of that essential cafe and bar culture here in Paris. Here's what he had to say.
No restaurants in Paris, no bars in Paris, no hotel in Paris is not Paris.
It's just not Paris, yeah.
Because Paris is, you want to drink something at the terrace. It's the spirit of Paris. The terrace, the cafe, the restaurants, the bars, it's the spirit of Paris.
It's just like what I told you last week, Shep. The fact is, if the French authorities actually did try to do a reconfinement in earnest, the French people, they would revolt. Shep?
Matt Bradley, live in Paris. Question, has the president's diagnosis had an effect on the election? And if so, what is it? Well, I mentioned we started our CNBC Change research polling just after we got word on Friday that the president had COVID, and the pollsters worked nonstop all weekend. The results are in, and we'll have them for you next. And then more football players test positive. The NFL keeps moving, even with superstar Cam Newton sidelined with COVID. How long can the NFL keep players on the field?
I'm looking forward to have an opportunity to do a town hall meeting.
State of the race. We go inside the numbers that reveal a remarkable swing toward the former vice president. And hundreds of movie theaters shutting their doors for good. Will your local cinema survive?
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 60 seconds.
The vote, new tonight, our first look at the impact of President Trump's COVID diagnosis, then hospitalization, on the election. We just got the results of our new CNBC Change research poll, States of Play. We asked likely voters in battleground states. First, how many of you have serious concerns about the virus? The answer, 72%, up from 63% when we asked the same question last month. The biggest increases in Florida and Wisconsin and North Carolina, people have serious concerns. So let's stay on that issue. Considering the president's hospitalization, we asked, did the president take appropriate precautions? Did Vice President Biden? 39% believe that President Trump did. 75% believe that Joe Biden did take appropriate precautions, a clear majority. And now perhaps the most telling result. Look at this chart. This is Joe Biden's favorability climbing significantly in the last 2 months as the president's remains flat. Steve Kornacki's been diving into the numbers since they came in this afternoon. Steve, first, what stands out for you?
Yeah, Shep, let's pick up that point you just brought up there. This is the favorable, unfavorable score for Biden in these six battleground states, 48 favorable, 49 unfavorable. I think the important context for that is this. Election Day 2016 in these same battleground states, this is where Hillary Clinton stood. You could see only 43 favorable, way over 50% on the unfavorable. Trump has been attacking Biden hard. The attacks do not seem to be sticking as they did against Hillary Clinton, at least for now. That's one of the two big changes we see. Second one is this. This is actually our Wall Street Journal NBC poll. But look at this. Voters 65 and older. Before the debate, we had Biden leading by four among senior citizens. After last week's debate, we took this poll. Look at that jump. The movement for Joe Biden nationally in the NBC Wall Street Journal poll was among senior citizens. And this is also developing as a big story here demographically, because that would be a major break from the last 20 years here. You see, last four presidential elections, senior citizens have been a Republican group, sometimes overwhelmingly. If Biden wins seniors by even a point, that's a major change. And again, our polling after that debate last week shows he might be moving ahead by well over a point among seniors.
The numbers are not in the president's favor right this moment. But give us some context. And is there precedent for coming back from these sorts of deficits to this period?
Yeah, make no mistake. These are the worst numbers since the conventions we've been seeing for Donald Trump. But it was around this time 4 years ago when we were saying the same thing. And I do think this is worth keeping in mind. This, what you're looking at right here, this is our October 13th, 2016 NBC Wall Street Journal poll. And there it was, Hillary Clinton over 50% ahead of Trump by 10 points nationally. Actually, the Biden leads a little bit more in our poll right now. But the point is, less than a month before the election, double digit deficit, Trump did recover and win from that. There certainly is precedent for him making big strides in the final weeks amidst controversy.
Yes, indeed. Steve Kornacki, thanks so much. There's more of this. In just a few minutes, we'll have the latest head-to-head numbers between the two candidates. These polls hot off the presses. How a very busy weekend and a very busy month moved people's votes. Well, a black man in Texas called a pillar of the community is dead tonight, shot and killed by police. Witnesses say he was trying to help. Tonight, the investigation. And tracking the spread, the president's fundraiser that raised COVID concerns. We talked to people who were there. Do they believe their health was put at risk? I'm Shepard Smith, and this is the news on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. President Trump back at the White House after three nights in the hospital. Marine One landed on the White House lawn at the top of this news hour. There is no cure for COVID-19. The president taking a mix of experimental treatments. Reporters asked the doctors today what the president is taking. They wouldn't answer. On Friday, the White House announced President Trump received a single 8-gram dose of Regeneron's antibody cocktail. Again, it's experimental and not approved by the FDA. His doctor also confirmed the president has been taking zinc, vitamin D, famotidine, melatonin, and a daily aspirin. Then his medical team confirmed that on Friday he started a course of the antiviral drug remdesivir. It's still in the clinical trials. It's a 5-day treatment, intravenous. The final one is set for tomorrow at the White House. Finally, yesterday, the president's medical team said he had been given a steroid typically reserved for severe COVID cases. Regeneron told CNBC's senior health and science reporter Meg Terrell that only a handful of people have received its drug outside of clinical trials. She's here now. Meg, are there serious side effects that the president could be dealing with from these drugs?
There potentially are, Shep. So let's start with the antibody cocktail. This, of course, is experimental, and we only saw the first results on it 6 days ago. And so the main thing to look out here, I'm told, is a rare side effect known as an infusion reaction. Now, this is a drug that's given by IV. And so you'd see that reaction, though rare, while the drug is getting administered. And it would be stopped in that case. And it doesn't sound like that happened here. For remdesivir, the president's doctors have said with each dose, they monitor for kidney and liver effects, and none have been seen. And finally, dexamethasone, that's, of course, that common steroid that the president's now taking. Doctors say a very common side effect of this drug, temporary feelings of euphoria. You were talking about this earlier. Some suggesting that could explain Trump's tweet this afternoon saying he feels better than he did 20 years ago. Now, of course, the drug is not indicated for patients early in the course of their disease because it can potentially suppress the immune system. Regeneron, though, saying because their antibody cocktail provides an immune boost, this may actually counter that effect. Of course, the president may also be characterized as a severe COVID-19 patient because his oxygen levels dropped below 94% on Friday and Saturday. And for severe disease, remdesivir and dexamethasone is a common treatment given to patients in the hospital. The drug that people are not going to be able to get easily, Shep, that's the antibody cocktail. It's not cleared by the FDA. Analysts already saying, though, they expect the FDA could potentially act to provide an emergency use authorization here potentially within days, calling this really a tacit endorsement, using it in the president to use this drug to treat COVID-19. Until then, though, the only way to get it is to join a clinical trial or through compassionate use, as the president did it. The company, aware of the equity issues here, particularly potential political ones, saying that they've reached out to the Biden campaign to tell them about compassionate use in case they have need of this. Chef.
Meg Terrell live for us and work from home like so many of you. New Jersey health officials say they're tracking more than 200 people who attended the president's fundraiser there on Thursday of last week. Here are the numbers from the New Jersey governor. 206 attendees and 19 staff members at the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster. The CDC reports it's helping the state track down anyone from out of state. Did the president's fundraiser violate health guidelines? Well, the New Jersey governor, Phil Murphy, said today on CNBC that he's investigating. If it did, he says, he's calling the state attorney general.
And it is clear that the president and his staff acted recklessly in coming to New Jersey in the first place, knowing that they had been exposed to someone with a confirmed positive test.
To Frank Holland now on the ground tonight in Bedminster with more on how health officials are trying to keep this virus from spreading.
Charlie Colleen felt safe enough at the president's fundraiser on Thursday to take his face covering off. Today, he and more than 200 others on an attendee list provided by the White House are the focus of contact tracing by New Jersey and federal health officials after the president tested positive for COVID-19.
He seemed to be in great health and high spirits, so I was very surprised to learn the next day that he did contract coronavirus.
Colleen and several other donors who attended the event believe proper safety protocols were in place, telling CNBC face coverings were only allowed off in smaller groups, including a sit-down and a photo op with the president for the biggest donors. Both were held indoors, but attendees say they were kept at least 6 feet away from the president and only allowed a minute to chat. Still, some understand the controversy.
I think the speculation is justified as to whether the president knew or not. I didn't feel unsafe based on the procedures they were taking. Whether the president knew or not, if he was sick, I can't say.
But I do believe if the president knew that he had COVID, the campaign should have canceled the event beforehand.
Contact tracing emails from New Jersey advised anyone within 6 feet of the president for more than 10 minutes to quarantine for 14 days. Catherine Hermes says she does not feel at risk.
I was about 40 to 45 feet away. The president stood behind a podium when I saw him. So I see no reason why I would even suspect that I'm going to get ill.
This is very much a race against the clock.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy saying the actions by the president and attendees could come with grave consequences.
The actions leading up to and during this event have put lives at risk.
And Shep, the governor and the state health department are urging all the attendees to take a COVID test between tomorrow and Thursday. They say it can take 5 to 7 days for the virus to be detectable, and a negative result before then is just not as reliable. Back over to you.
Frank Holland live in New Jersey. Stocks jumped higher to start the week, and that's what's topping CNBC on the money. Renewed hope for disaster relief for Americans suffering in the COVID crisis. The markets liked that today, though we've all heard it before. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin spoke on the phone, we're told, on moving a package forward. The president stepping up calls for Congress to get it done. Talks continue tomorrow. The last relief package passed 6 months ago. It expired last week. Like a grocery store that has no food to sell. That's how the head of Regal Cinemas describes his movie theaters. He's decided to close all 500-plus locations in the U.S. this Thursday. The company began reopening in July, but the CEO says the delay of the new James Bond movie is a damaging blow. The stock down 20% on the session today. And package delivery from Walmart by drone. The company testing new ways to get their products to all of us. It signed three deals with drone companies in just the last month, playing catch-up with Amazon and UPS. On Wall Street, the Dow up 465 today. S&P up 1.8%. The NASDAQ up 2.3%. 29 days till the election. Both campaigns in full swing as a record number of voters cast their ballots early. See who's hitting the trail for each candidate. Then Lester Holt gives us an inside look into tonight's town hall with Joe Biden. That's here on CNBC at the top of the hour. Can the former vice president sway the undecided voters in the audience? Then to Egypt for details of an incredible find. 60 coffins that are thousands of years old. Archaeologists opened one, and inside, a stunner.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
President Trump back at the White House after leaving the hospital. You saw him there on the balcony just a short time ago for the stand and salute moment, maskless. Earlier this hour, walking back to the White House, pausing for that photo op at the top of the stairs. Let's get to NBC News Chief White House Correspondent Hallie Jackson, who's out on the North Lawn there for us this evening. Hallie, there's so much we don't know. And we were just talking in the commercial break. How are his lungs?
We don't know the answer to that, Shep. I wish I could tell you. The president's doctor, Sean Conley, is not disclosing details of the president's lung scans or addressing this issue of whether the president might have pneumonia, as some medical experts have, again, who are not treating the president and don't know for sure, but they're looking at the scope and scale of this, and that is something that is a concern. We don't have a great answer to that. Here's another thing we don't know. When was the president's last negative test? The president's physician did not say. In fact, he said he didn't want to look backwards. But you have to remember, Shep, looking backwards is how you end up not spreading this infection further, right? Because being able to figure out the time when somebody was infectious, even before they got a positive test, is critical to determining who else was exposed and who else may be at risk. There's also another question, Shep, and I'm actually working as we were coming on the air to get an answer for you on this, but why did the president take off his mask when he went up the stairs to the Blue Room balcony as he returned here to the White House tonight? He may not have been putting people at risk in the physical space where he was. It's unclear based on the video, and I'm obviously not there, how far away folks were. But from a messaging perspective, folks have been listening for 7 months to medical experts saying one of the most critical things you can do in this pandemic is keep your mask on, Shep.
And Dr. Redlener said to us earlier that the president is unquestionably and without doubt a super spreader now. So a super spreader just walked into the White House. What's the mood like around there?
I would say a couple of things. Surreal is one. I would say quiet is the other. I've been, as you know, covering this administration since day one. And you don't often walk into the White House on a very busy weekday and see it as empty as it has been here. Why is that? Well, it's because some staffers are working from home. A lot of them are. We just heard today that White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany has tested positive for COVID. Two of her deputies, we've confirmed, have also tested positive. People are choosing to not come into the building. Some are. I spoke with one White House official who was here. He was wearing a mask. I was wearing a mask. We were far away. We were outside. But I said, hey, why did you even come in today? And the argument is that some of these staffers are considered and deemed essential workers. And so they feel like there are certain things that they can only do at the office for security reasons and other reasons. And so that is why you're seeing at least some folks here. But boy, Shep, it has been a very extraordinary, to say the least, 72 hours covering this White House.
I bet Shep. It has. Hallie Jackson out in the yard. Thank you, Hallie.
Thanks, Shep.
72 hours at Walter Reed Medical Center. The president back at the White House, obviously, but that hasn't stopped the campaigns. Vice President Pence is set to attend a rally in Arizona coming up on Thursday, so in 3 days. Officials say Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, and Laura Trump will also hit the campaign trail. Meantime, the former Vice President Joe Biden is down in Miami. Today, he visited the Little Haiti Cultural Center there. Biden also spoke in the city's Little Havana neighborhood. Also this week, the vice presidential nominees face off in their first debate. That's Wednesday night. And this time, there will be plexiglass between the two candidates. We learned that just today. Remember, the level of early voting has been unprecedented. Almost 4 million people have voted already. That's a record by far. This time in 2016, only 80,000 people had voted by this point. The Democratic candidate will join Lester Holt for a campaign town hall here on CNBC, live at the top of the hour. I spoke with Lester this afternoon and asked him if the president's move from the hospital to the White House made for any last-minute changes.
Well, it's going to be obviously the first time we've seen him in prime time really talking in detail about what the president has been going through. I think it's fair to say that we'll be asking some real-time questions as this story moves along. The vice president has been obviously very careful here, not wanting to gloat or I told you so. At the same time, he's running a campaign that is centered on the whole idea that the administration has been ineffective and lackadaisical in dealing with the COVID crisis. So we'll certainly raise it. We'll see where it goes.
I hear that you have undecided voters in the audience tonight. How hard was it to find those?
Well, you know, it's not easy. I mean, I was not part of the selection of the audience, but the team that was, a lot of interviews involved, trying to really get to the crux of what issues that people are leaning toward. I would say a fair number of people, though, are undecided. We do have some people on the panel, though, who have suggested that they may not vote, that they may be turned off by both candidates. So we'll kind of get a mixture of people whose, I guess you could argue, votes are still up for grabs.
How much have the campaigns had to adjust and adapt since the president tested positive, Lester?
Well, a lot. I mean, but you saw quickly the Trump campaign. I mean, the president himself, you could argue, was campaigning on that drive around. The signal was given right away that it's full steam ahead for the Trump team. The vice president out on the stump, surrogates, family members out there. And the Biden campaign, of course, decided not to run negative ads, but it didn't stop the campaigning. Vice President Biden here in Florida today, a state that's really critical to his fortunes on the campaign trail. So I think maybe some of the rhetoric coming from the Biden side has been, shall we say, fine-tuned, or they've lightened up on some of the message. But I think 29 days ago, no one's ready to suddenly suspend a campaign.
So the Biden town hall just a few minutes away here on CNBC and on NBC. Do you expect or anticipate that you'll have a town hall with President Trump as well before the election?
We're always in contact with both campaigns. And in fact, we have communicated to the White House team prior to the president being hospitalized our desire to do something like this or a sit down or whatever we might be able to accommodate. But certainly offers have been put out to both campaigns, and the Biden camp decided to do this.
And just 14 minutes. Lester, thanks so much. His town hall with Joe Biden follows the live airing of this newscast, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on CNBC. An anti-Semitic attack in Germany tops our news around the world in 80 seconds. Germany. Police arresting a man accused of attacking a Jewish student with a shovel. The attack near a synagogue in Hamburg. German media report the suspect suffered serious head injuries. Nearly a year ago, a gunman attacked a German synagogue on Yom Kippur. Reports showing anti-Semitic attacks rising in Germany. France. Dozens feared dead. Heavy flooding ravaging the French Riviera in northern Italy. The floods burying these cars in mud, sweeping away roads and damaging homes. France deploying more than 1,000 firefighters to help find the missing victims. Experts say the country saw half the average annual rainfall in just 10 hours. Egypt, a centuries-old discovery near Cairo. Archaeologists finding 59 coffins that were buried 2,600 years ago. Check out the hieroglyphics on this one. The archaeologist opened one of the coffins, showing a perfectly preserved mummy inside. The findings will be displayed at the Grand Egyptian Museum next year. The Philippines. Hundreds of people in cars had their pets blessed on World Animal Day. The pandemic forcing the annual event to be a drive-thru. The priest sprinkling holy water on dogs, cats, even birds. A possum event on this trip around the world in 80 seconds. Friends and family called Jonathan Price a well-liked member of his North Texas community. And now they're wondering why police shot and killed him. This is a live look as residents in Wolf City, Texas, have gathered asking what's happening with the investigation in the hands of Texas Rangers as the crowds grow. Live coverage just ahead. A vigil in Texas now, and a police officer on administrative leave. a story too familiar in America. The Texas Rangers investigating why an officer shot and killed 31-year-old Jonathan Price at a gas station. Happened on Saturday. His friends say he was a pillar of the community. His family says he was only trying to break up a fight between a man and a woman. NBC's Morgan Chesky live in Wolf City in Texas. Morgan, what are you learning about Saturday's shooting, the details?
Yeah, Shep, good evening. We know that investigators staying very tight-lipped on the circumstances surrounding this tragedy. Texas Rangers have just recently taken over the investigation. But what we're learning tonight here, Shep, in Wolf City is that Jonathan Price was absolutely not a stranger in this community. And proof of that, right behind me, several hundred people turning out here on one of the main thoroughfares in town, gathering to pay tribute to Jonathan and his family, who have been in this community for three generations. Friends and family taking the microphone here, sharing their favorite memories of Jonathan, also calling for justice following the circumstances of his death. Just a few minutes ago, Shep, I had a chance to speak with Jonathan's father outside of his childhood home, and he explained to me what took place whenever he got the call that his son had been shot, and he had an exchange with a police officer shortly thereafter. Take a listen.
What have police, what have investigators told you about what happened that night?
I hadn't heard anything.
They
I
haven't, told you anything?
Not me. All I know, my son is dead and we got shot by a police officer, and the police officer was not in jail.
Wolf City officials say that that officer who fired those fatal shots has now been placed on administrative leave. Meanwhile, the Texas Rangers just released a statement today saying that they have now taken over this investigation from Wolf City, but have no further comment at this time. Chef
Morgan Chesky live for us there. Thanks, Morgan. California marking a grim milestone now. Wildfires have burned 4 million acres of land so far this year. 4 million. For perspective, that's larger than the size of the state of Connecticut and more than double the state's previous record for any year. Tonight, fires still rage in spots from San Francisco down to Los Angeles. Firefighters hoping to catch a break with the weather, and it looks like they may get it. The forecasters calling for cloudy conditions with a chance of rain this week. The NFL's COVID crackdown. New tonight, the league threatens tough penalties for safety violations. Could even be forced to forfeit a game. Breaking COVID rules in the NFL could now cost your favorite team a win. That from the commissioner, Roger Goodell, today, announcing new protocols, bans on gatherings outside the team's facilities, limiting the number of tryouts each week, mandating all staff and players wear personal protective equipment, and so much more. NFL making it clear compliance is mandatory. Break the rules, you pay more fines, could lose a draft pick, could even have to forfeit a game. The Tennessee Titans had 20 total positive tests over 6 days, but none today. If there are none tomorrow, they can reopen facilities. Just minutes away now from NBC's Town Hall with Joe Biden, Lester Holt hosting here on CNBC. Let's turn to Robert Costa, national political reporter with the Washington Post, NBC News political analyst. Robert, we want to get your reaction to this survey. In a head-to-head matchup in six battleground states, Joe Biden leaves by 5%. It was 4 points a month ago, so hardly any movement, statistically none. Does that surprise?
It's not a surprise because most presidential campaigns are known for signature political moments. Instead, this campaign is known for a blizzard of moments that makes it hard for voters who may be undecided to really figure out what matters. Think about Bob Woodward's book Rage, the death of Justice Ginsburg, the New York Times story on the president's tax returns, now the president's health. It's like a ping pong ball going back and forth for many voters of headlines, and the bases are staying respectively in their own corners.
That poll, a CNBC Change Research poll, but the next couple of days are fraught with peril and rich with opportunity. It just I don't know which one we're going to get yet. Do you know if there's a strategy?
The strategy for President Trump is to try to revive his political prospects by re-engaging with the campaign, whether that's on social media or through television, eventually to get back on the campaign trail. This has been a frozen presidential campaign for weeks, really months, due to the pandemic, but it's really been frozen due to the president's hospitalization in recent days.
Yeah.
Now that dynamic changes.
It certainly does. Robert Costa, thanks so much. We'll be watching at the White House over the next hour or so and have complete reporting tomorrow, beginning with Squawk on the Street in the morning and Squawk Box. And we'll have full coverage on CNBC Business Day and throughout the evening. And now you know the news for this Monday, October the 5th, 2020. I'm Shepard Smith at CNBC Global Headquarters. Hope to see you back here tomorrow. Right now, a special presentation, Lester Holt's Town Hall with Joe Biden on CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.